the rest of the story. Before I begin, you have to realize that England's King George II was no politician. He was not particularly wild about official functions, the dressing up, the pomp, the ceremony. He would have made a lousy Louis XIV. The one thing George did like was a good fight, and better still, a good war. In fact, King George II was the last British monarch ever to appear on a battlefield on purpose. That's the sort of thing that turned George on, making war, not music. On the other hand, George's wife and daughters, the queen and princesses, were devoted opera lovers. So naturally, if perfunctorily, the king patronized musical endeavor in general, and one composer in particular, a composer also named George. So composer and king had a name in common, but that was all they shared. Now, King George's dislike of composer George was not fair, of course. It was just that the king's father had greatly admired the fellow, and George II hated everything about his father. And still, perhaps at the insistence of the music-loving queen, her husband the king, upon his coronation, commissioned George to compose the official anthems. And then the king went off somewhere to fight, and everybody was happy. Well, now it's later. Years have gone by. It's the waning March of 1743. The queen says, "We're going to a concert tonight." The king says, "Oh, no, we're not." The queen asks, "Why not?" The press says it's going to be a wonderful program. But the king admonishes the press does not know everything. And then he relates the rest of the story. For once, he has some cultural news. He has overheard that, unknown to the public, tonight's program has been changed. Tonight, they're doing that thing. The queen wants to know what thing. "Well, the thing nobody likes," the king replied. "That thing by George, the composer." In any case, they're not announcing it because they're afraid nobody will show up. Well, the queen says, "We're going," and that's all there is to it. Or indeed, wearing a crown and wearing the pants are two entirely different things. Well, anyway, the royal couple is off to Covent Garden. It's going to be a long evening. The music starts, and from the king's perspective, it's never, ever going to stop. Hours pass, real hours, like years in the ears of King George. But then suddenly, incredibly, the almost dozing monarch hears, can it be, a tribute? A tribute to him? Quickly, he struggles to his feet. And the audience, acknowledging him, stands also. Well, that's how it all began. No, the performance that evening was no better received than the previous ones. But in years to come, George's composition would be much appreciated. And when it was, the tradition that was born that March night in 1743 would continue as it does unto this day. For what King George heard that made him stand up were the words sung by the choir. Even still, enthralled audiences the world over stand as one upon hearing those words in the sacred masterpiece of composer George Friedrich Handel, in the immortal Hallelujah Chorus of the towering oratorio which you know as the Messiah. The world stands up when the choir shall sing, and he shall reign forever and ever. And now you know the rest of the story.